Hot Business is powered by Standard Bank Business and Commercial Banking, delivering expert support and tailored solutions to help your business grow with confidence, clarity, and resilience.
Now, as trade tensions between global superpowers intensify, Africa suddenly finds itself both exposed, but also, I think, uniquely positioned. Tariffs rising, export routes are shifting, and geopolitical alliances are being redrawn. With AGOA set to expire, the question is no longer if Africa will be impacted, but I think how it's going to respond. And joining me now is Gulam Balim, who's chief economist at Standard Bank, who has sat on a panel at the bank's Africa Unlocked 2025 conference in Cape Town on that issue. Gulam, a very warm welcome. So no doubt the continent at a strategic crossroads, but in real terms, what do you think it means for ordinary businesses and economies across the continent?
Jeremy, at the headline level, of course, these type of developments are unwelcome because it injects one uncertainty and real walls in terms of the tariff frictions, and that can, of course, temper both business confidence as well as the inclination to invest. But that said, there are several areas of silver lining. Firstly, the disturbances from the United States does not appear to be tripping global growth as many initially anticipated. So the subtraction to global growth from, let's say, January 2025 expectations is not that severe for a few reasons. One is that global financial conditions have in fact eased rather than hardened. So put differently, interest rates in most markets are lower and access to capital is not materially impeded. The second reason is commodity prices have held up reasonably well. And in fact, we think commodity prices will rise over the next 2 years by about 20%. And commodities are very important, not just for South Africa, but for a variety of African economies. And that through that channel, again, the damage to the global economy or to African economies has not been as severe as anticipated. In other words, we seem to have avoided the tail risk of a global recession or severe bludgeoning. The additional feature that gives cause for cheer is that in many African economies and in South Africa, inflation is either falling or fairly benign. And what that has meant is central banks can come to the party, so to speak, and lower interest rates, providing domestic tailwind or idiosyncratic nudge to growth prospects. So in that respect, we think that at least cyclically, the outlook is not as bad or as worrisome as it could be. And if I could just add another dimension linked to your question more meaningfully, seven of the world's fastest growing corridors exclude the United States. And by that, what we're trying to suggest is that even prior to Donald Trump, trade activity was burgeoning outside of the United States, and Africa was included in that trade dynamic.
So in that respect then, and particularly as the African Growth and Opportunity Act is set to expire, you talk about that silver lining. Gulam, how do African economies, and notably South Africa's economy, capitalize on that quickly? What do they need to do in order to pivot quickly and seize the opportunity?
Jeremy, so I mean, this may sound a little bit academic, but the first thing is to realize that we're in a fraught geopolitical environment. It's not temporary. It's not what we say cyclical. It's here for some time. So geoeconomic and geopolitical contention is the subject matter of the next few years, if not more than a decade, firstly. Secondly, I think you use the word pivot. Many of our clients are telling us that, in fact, they are receiving orders from, say, the Far East or the Middle East for goods that otherwise would have been imported to those nations from the United States. So, seemingly bizarrely, South African exporters are replacing American exporters in this time of cross-Atlantic frictions. And this is occurring in the farming industry and also in certain and select manufacturing areas. One significant car manufacturer has signaled, for example, that they're getting inquiries from Europe for motor vehicle export from South Africa, given existing platforms, given the frictions between Europe and the United States. Now, I guess that just speaks to this, let's call it friend-shoring opportunity. amidst all of those frictions. Now, having said that, it's not gen I don't want to be generalized about it, because, for example, we're seeing headlines where Mercedes-Benz South Africa is also more vulnerable, because 90% of its exports of vehicles actually go to the United States. So it's a bit of a varied picture, but the idea of what we're calling an arc of opportunity that stretches from the Western Cape, Cape Town, through the Middle East and to the Far East, where more aligned nations with more common international values will be able to establish multi-year channels of trading opportunity. It's going to be slow. It'll take time, but the die has been cast.
Well, let's talk about that arc of opportunity. And you talk about the cross-Atlantic tensions, geopolitical realignment well underway. So where does BRICS fit into all of this? Does it offer a viable counterweight to the traditional Western trade partners that we've seen? Or do you think we may be overestimating the immediate potential?
So BRICS, and as you're well aware, BRICS Plus, as it has more recently evolved into, combined with notions of the Global South, speaks precisely to this idea that geopolitical dimensions and globalization is refashioning itself, and even prior to Donald Trump's emergence for his second term. So put differently, the die had already been cast. And this realization that the Global South is emerging and must forge greater integrations. I don't think that, despite President Trump's assertions and attempt to temper China's rise or to even derail increasing associations amongst BRICS nations or the Global South, I don't think his endeavors will work. Of course, he will attempt to stymie it. He will attempt to undermine the G20, for that matter, and he will attempt to force frictions between emerging market nations. And I suspect that he's not going to, that will not succeed. And quite simply, if we look at the pattern of trade and financial flow changes over the last 30 years, increasing arc of opportunity integration is going to take place. And I will just conclude by saying, the catch-up economies are in the emerging markets. Faster-growing economies are in the emerging markets. And leaning into those markets will be for greater prosperity for Africa. And this is quickly, I should say, not to undermine America's importance or to suggest we should be actively delinking. We should engage with the U.S. and attempt to establish some sort of new equilibrium, but not forsake the Asian or Middle Eastern opportunity.
And Ghulam, let me just use that word pivot again and just ask you a quick question about a lot of chatter around lowering the inflation target. And I'm interested to get your view very quickly on the technical and economic explanations of doing this. It builds on Saab's modeling, I think, of showing the midpoint is now more attractive. But where do you see positivity and where do you see downside here?
So the vanilla case is quite simply the belief that low inflation is good for the economy. It lowers uncertainty and it increases efficiency. So, that's the central bank sort of raison d'etat. It's a reason for existing, firstly. Inflation is fairly low right now, at around 3%, and the Reserve Bank, as any bank would want to do, will perpetually want to drive steady state inflation lower to, say, 2 or 3%. Now, the Reserve Bank wants to use this window of opportunity now to reset the inflation target focus from 3 to 6% to perhaps a point target of 3%, and I endorse their ambition. The difficulty or the trade-off is that when you attempt to lower the inflation targets, the markets assume you will then have to undertake a more conservative interest rate posture. In other words, higher interest rates that would otherwise be the case with a higher inflation if you're pursuing a low inflation target. So the suggestion then, if you're going to lower the inflation target, it may come with some growth sacrifice. If the Reserve Bank is allowed to move quickly, in other words, given mandate by the National Treasury, with inflation now at 3%, it's quite possible that inflation expectations could then drift lower more quicker than if inflation was, say, at 4 or 4.5%. So there's a window of opportunity that could, in fact, limit the growth cost to the economy if that inflation target is lowered soon. And the further delay, the more the growth cost would be.
I'm going to thank you for that. Gulam Balim, thank you indeed. Chief Economist at Standard Bank. He's been sitting on a panel at the bank's Africa Unlocked 2025 conference ongoing in Cape Town.
Hot Business is powered by Standard Bank Business and Commercial Banking, delivering expert support and tailored solutions to help your business grow with confidence, clarity, and resilience.